great sun so bright. Unify our world. Our shoes placed together in harmony. We are one. Rebirth of the sun.
The whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like as not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
Well, there you go. Kicking it off again for another day here in the bunker. Ha, ha, ha. With the world collapsing around us. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And the blasé action and thinking of people walking down the street that don't even understand that not only racially, but economically, this thing is about to go down the tube. Unless I'm very badly mistaken, because there's some very, very smart people are telling us, warning us, that what's going to happen cannot be stopped. It's gone too far. The tremendous debt is unbelievable. And they keep adding more and more. And I notice here in California, the governor, he's wanting to tax people more for gasoline and so forth, and their licenses and stuff. And the people are resisting a little bit, but you know the big boys will get what they want. So let it come. You let it come. This is the lone wolf saying, Chaos Factor, thank you. And it is the fifth day of April 2017, and the world keeps spinning, and it always will, unless some asteroid, big asteroid, hits it. And then it'll still keep turning with a few pockmarks on it.
I'll tell you something right here and now. It may be hot tonight, but it's going to get hotter for a whole lot of people. This here little town's going to burn. What I mean, it's going to burn the conscience of the country and put forth a light that everyone and everybody's going to see and feel. This town I'm talking about, Caxton. Yeah! People, something happened today. 10 Negroes went into the Caxton High School and sat with the white children there. Nobody stopped them. Nobody turned them out. And you know what they're saying? That means they're saying that you all don't give a darn whether the whites mix with the blacks because you didn't fight against it. Well, I say, how can somebody fight what he doesn't see? They've kept the facts away from you. They've cheated and deceived every one of you. They filled your heads with filthy lies and kept you in the dark. So that when you finally do wake up, why, we're sorry, but it's just too late. All right. Now, I'm associated Patrick Henry Society, which is an organization dedicated to giving the people the truth. What I'm going to tell you is going to make your blood boil. Because I'm going to show you that the way this country is going to go depends entirely and wholly and completely on you.
You just got it!
you all know that there was peace and quiet in the South before the NAACP started stirring up trouble. But what you don't know is that this so-called advancement of colored people is now and has always been nothing but a communist front headed by a Jew who hates America and doesn't make any bones about it either. Well, the commies didn't waste a second. They knew only too well, friends, that the quickest way to cripple a country is to mongrelize it. So they poured all the millions of dollars the Jews could get for them into this one thing, desegregation. They went to the courts. Now, Judge Silver, who is a Jew and is known to have leftist leanings.
Who says so?
The record says so. Look it up. Abraham Silver, for one thing, belongs to the Quill and Pen Society, which receives its funds indirectly from Moscow. So what did the judge do? Went right ahead and ordered integration for the Caxton High School. Your mayor and the governor could have stopped it, but they didn't have the guts. All right. Now, you may think the problem is simply whether we're going to allow 10 Negroes to go to our schools. That's only a small part. I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like as not, a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you? Now let me ask you. Do you people want niggers taken over?
No!
And are you willing to fight this thing down to the last ditch and keep fighting until it's over? And I'm willing to fight with you.
Why, Mr. Kramer?
Why? Because I'm an American, sir, and I love my country. And I'm willing to give my life, if that be necessary, to see that my country stays free, white, and American!
Thank you, Mr. William Shatner. That was a tremendous speech. But they didn't listen to you. Some listened to you, but not enough. And so we've got what we've got today. Instead of having racial separation, we have mongrelization. And Senator Bilbo was right back in the 40s when he spoke before Congress and said the problem is mongrelization. And of course, like I've told you before, the Soviet Union was pushing that hard as one of their main weapons against this country. People forget that. Soviet Principle 10. Now, the Soviet communism, so-called, fell, but it was absorbed by much of the progressive movement in this country. There's no doubt about that. They just changed the name. And that's what they promoted, mongrelization of the race, the number one enemy of the white race, not economics. Economics is very important, but not the main thing. race mixing is the biggest threat to the white race, and it's going at lightning speed. And at this point, there's no power in this country that's willing to stop it. So you're going to have to, you're having an army of mulattoes now. You notice that? All these gals on TV, and these ones that are not these, you know, liver-lipped Ubangis that are attractive. Yeah, that's not an accident. The Jews and their buddies have been promoting this mulatto race for a long time. And they're gaining a lot of ground among whites. You see more and more white men teaming up with these mulatto women. They would have never teamed up with these big-ass, liver-lipped Ubangis in the old days. No, they just were not acceptable at all. White guys would team up with non-white Mexicans that were lighter and things like that, but not those black women. Even their own black men didn't like to team up with them. They said, "We want the white women. We want the white man's women. We're going to show that guy, those white people, what for." And that's what they proceeded to do. Very simple. Very simple. While the bulk of the white race just sit on their ass and let it happen. Because the leadership of the country has always been traitors. Even back in revolutionary times, they were traitors. The Supreme Court, 9 old men who could decide anything means anything. That's what Jefferson said. We've been betrayed by the ruling class all along. This didn't just start, and it just didn't start about race either. It's the ruling class farming you and using you and taking advantage of everything you've got as the working class. But now you're divided up, what's left of the white race, between the progressives and the neoconservatives. Both sides are full of crap. Both sides are just as big of enemies to the white race as anything else. Yeah, so you have to choose between the two threats to your race. How are you ever going to win that way? No, the only thing that will ever begin to straighten this out is Mother Nature, might is right, and territorial imperative, and when the guerrilla warfare and all that kind of stuff starts. It can't start now. No, they want you to do that. I just got a dossier from the FBI that somebody sent me, and it's full of how the FBI had a major program of thousands of people infiltrating to destroy the racial struggle, especially the right wing. The right wing is very susceptible to that. It's easy to infiltrate the right wing. And that's why I went to a non-membership type situation, lone wolf. It's the only thing that can give you any kind of security. If you don't talk about yourself, it's pretty hard for them to do anything to you unless you're stupid. Now, these guys that go out and get in a fight with a black and kill them on the street, they love that because they can use that against the racial people. And but we have to go through that. There's going to be thousands more rise up and just on the street level and brutalize blacks or somebody else. But, and at the same time, the whites are going to be even brutalized more. And especially if you happen to say you're a racist. And everybody stands back, and the progressives like it. They like it when the white racists are attacked and beaten and killed. So what do we give a shit about them, those white people? They're gone dead to the race. So forget about them. And when bad things happen to them, well, there's nothing you can do about it or want to do about it, because if they don't listen, they'll have to feel. But don't get involved with a lot of this violence. I tell the guys in prison, stay out of gangs. Keep your powder dry. Okay, that's that for now.
Did you think your plans were secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep, or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? There's the man who did the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall, and the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all. How the children made his habits and your random dancing patterns, and I burned
comes to this FBI stuff. I had boxes of that stuff at the old bunker. I mean, I looked through it, but it's very boring. You think these federal agents are so smart and they got everything going in their way? That's bullshit. There's so many stupid FBI agents, Treasury agents, and so forth. Now, there's a lot of smart ones, too, but not nearly as many as the dumb ones. Look at what Ames got away with. Jeez, he was doing it right under their nose, and they didn't understand. And he was buying houses and big, nice cars and everything, and they didn't even have a clue. So that gives you an idea. And look at the 9/11. I mean, they had all kinds of information that would have stopped 9/11. And on and on it goes. All these guys do is stand by and wait for something to happen, and then they get involved. They don't stop anything. Well, I wouldn't say anything. Some things they do stop if they get a clue. Most of the people they arrest are people they talked into doing something. That's the biggest thing. Now, if we can just get those right-wing racists to try to pull off a bombing or something, then we got them, man, and we'll get some stuff and we'll give it to them, and then we'll come in at the last minute and be the heroes on the white horses. It's all a game. In fact, they need it. This criminal government needs people to go out and do violent things. It works right into their plan, so they can make more laws and put more people in jail and build more prisons and all that kind of stuff. It's a money-making deal. Homeland Security, people are making fortunes off Homeland Security. I told this several times about it. I was listening to a couple of black guys on the radio, and the one guy said a buddy of his got enough money from Homeland Security, he's a millionaire. Millionaire in a short time. So all these kind of bureaus and all that are never going to solve any problem. They never did. Like the poverty plans, Johnson's War on Poverty. Well, there's a book around from the 60s called Poverty's Where the Money Is. If they took all the money that was spent on the war on poverty and split it among every black family in the country, all their kids could go to 4 years of Harvard. But most of them didn't get a damn dime. And the blacks are right about that. They don't get as much as you think they do. They do get welfare, but so do white people. Actually, more white people get welfare than black people. And I don't deny anybody that welfare, because the people at the top are such crooks. They're stealing billions, like the banks, like how they got bailed out. They're making billions in these heads of these banks, you know, making $1 million a year or more. So it's ridiculous to cry about poor people trying to get some money. Anyhow, you can't begin to understand and fight this thing, or maybe fight this thing, unless you know what crooks they are at the top. You got to take off the gloves and say, well, a lot of the stuff the progressive put out about the rotten, crooked people at the top in the military-industrial complex is right. And when they're right, say they're right. When they're wrong, of course, say they're wrong. And when the Trumpites, billionaires surrounded by billionaires and Jews and everybody else, when they say the right thing, okay, that's right. When they bullshit and lie like they do, they lie like hell. Trump does lie. Well, you got a problem. And the right wing and most of the people who are involved in the racial struggle are following lockstep behind a goddamn crook. And I don't care whether you like it or not. I said the same thing about that bastard Ronald Reagan. In fact, all of these presidents that I can remember have turned out to be rats and crooks. But people keep arguing about which rat and which crook to back. I don't back any of them. They all should be in federal prison, Aryan prison someplace, and let most of the people that are in prison out. Most of the working class, let them out. Put the shirking class, the 2%, the 3%, all these people that are robbing us blind and starting wars and creating urban renewal over in the Middle East, bombing people, you know, this latest battle over there. They're killing everybody in the town. They're destroying every building in the town, saying they're fighting ISIS. That is horseshit. And anybody that supports that is a warmonger. A warmonger. That's like they said in Vietnam. Destroy the village to save the village. Bomb the village to save the village. It's crazy, but even among white racialists, so-called right wing, they don't understand it. They still don't understand it. They want to get a team and back them. Oh boy, Ronald, he's going to straighten things out. He's going to take care of everything. Well, you wait and see how this comes out. It's not going to be a very good deal, I'll tell you that. People can call me every name they want. I don't give a shit, because I've been this way for decades, and I'm going to remain this way until the dying day.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. Call.
The 1% of the wealthiest people versus the 99% of the rest of us. According to the Economic Policy Institute, between 1979 and 2007, the top 1%, and let's just think about this, took home well over half, 53% of the total increase in U.S. income. But it's not that they took home half the income. We're just talking about the delta here, right? If basically 50% of the raises in this country went to the top 1%. The bottom 99%, their wealth grew by 19%. The top 1%, grew 200%. You got that? So if you had, if you were in the bottom 99% and you had $20,000, over this period, if you were the average, that $20,000 on a good day would be $24,000. Now, nothing to scoff at. $4,000's a good pot of money. But let's just say you're in the top 1%. And let's just say the top 1% had 20, for the sake of evening out the money. Right? If you had 20,000, by the end of this period, you had 30,000. No, sorry, 40,000, because you didn't grow by one. Factors of 1,000, 10,000 times. And that creates different worlds. We are actually speciating in a way. The wealthy and everyone else. All of the gains that society is making, all of our productivity, everything you do in your work doesn't serve you. And this is the important point, and this is what this does. You can work as hard as you want, but unless you win the lottery in some sort of way, you're not getting into the 1%. I'm just telling you that. Just straight up, unless you have some sort of lottery win, and it doesn't just mean going and playing the Powerball. What do I mean? Well, lottery in terms of talent, you know, being the lucky sperm who's born LeBron James. That's, you know, winning the lottery to have that type of talent. You have the literary skill of J.K. Rowling. You are in the right place at the right time, at the right moment. It's not that these people don't work hard. Look, they work hard. LeBron James, I know our Cleveland people are angry. I know you're bitter, but he just lost the NBA championship, so get over it. No, you don't like LeBron. I'm just using him as an example. LeBron works hard. LeBron cultivated his talent, and look, I actually have no problem with athletes earning that much money. I know this is like, some people are like, well, athletes and movie stars earn too much money. Actually, I have no problem with that. Here's why. Athletes and movie stars, as wealthy as they are workers. And by the way, they're actually union workers. SAG and, in the case of LeBron, the NBA Players Association. If they don't make the money, their fat cat bosses are going to make the money. So I actually don't – they're the ones who – the Miami Heat makes money because LeBron James can shoot a basketball. So LeBron James deserves that money. I'm not actually critiquing him. Of all the people in our society who earn wealth, athletes and movie stars actually earn it, meaning, you know, Julia Roberts makes – which Sandra Bullock made $70 million on Gravity. I'm using her as the example because of Gravity. She made $70 million on Gravity. Because Gravity was a good movie, and she just earned it with her labor. So I actually have no problem with movie stars. But my point is, to enter that 1%, you have to win some sort of lottery. You know, I have friends in Silicon Valley. I don't want to insult them right now. But I have two types of friends in Silicon Valley. I have the friends. And I'm just giving this as an example. I'm going to be very generic because I don't want to sell them out in any way. But I have friends who back in 1997, 1998, went to work for Google as their 30th, 40th, 20th, 60th employee. And I'm using Google as the example. And I have friends who went to work for Pets.com as their 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th, 60th employee. And The difference between the two groups is, $1 billion. And a few of them on the Google side of that equation are honest that they just got lucky. That Google was some weird, Yahoo was the dominant search engine, Google were some weird thing started by these two guys, Larry and Sergey, and nobody really knew how it was going to work and if it was going to dominate, blah, 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 blah. They just got lucky. They'll say that. These guys would have been rich, meaning they were high-end engineers, etc. They would have made... They wouldn't have been in the 1%, but they certainly would have been in the 2%. They got to be in the 0.1%, and they'll acknowledge they completely won the lottery by choosing Google over whatever. You went to work for Facebook instead of MySpace. And certainly not Friendster. Remember Friendster? I wonder if that still exists anymore. That would be weird. Hold on. I want to actually see if Friendster still exists, because do you remember Friendster?
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network.
3-4. Testing. 1-2.
I'm the kind of guy that wears a belt and suspenders at the same time. That's a conservative, man.
Declaration of War, November 25th. Declaration.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
I enjoy the notes from people, but there's like a group of, you know, I don't know how many. Sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's 8, and they just start sending all kinds of shit, and they send me political stuff and all that I immediately erase, and immediately get rid of, delete, whatever it is. I don't want to why. I don't care about it. And so they go, hey, you told a story the other day, which is true, about two kids who tried to hit a guy and do the knockout thing, and they did. They got him, and the guy was an older guy, and I don't know how big or little he was or whatever, but these two kids decided he should be a target, and they tried to do the knockout game where they hit you as hard as you can, and one videos it, and you try and knock the person out or kill them with one punch. The guy got a gun, and this guy said, you know, he says, do you know that the kid he shot was 16 years old? And the guy that they tried to hit ran him down and shot him and gunned him down in the back, shot him in the back. The kid was running away. How would you like it if that happened to your son? My kid wouldn't be playing the knockout game. And hello, I think it's perfectly all right. If you're a dumb 16-year-old thug and you're playing the knockout game, and a really mean son of a bitch you fuck with gets a gun and shoots your fucking ass, you deserved every ounce of lead. Every ounce. I love these guys. They're 50 years old. Like those five guys that were accused of the rape of the woman in the park, and you find out they really are scumbags. And they all go, oh, when we were young, we were really bad. But now we've been in jail for 28 years, and we're okay now. We're nice people. Yeah, give them each $4 million apiece. They were scumbags then. They did something. They went to jail. Okay, if they didn't rape her, they raped somebody else probably. They certainly robbed people and hurt them. Jesus. It's unbelievable. Why are you laughing?
They got to be guilty somewhere at some point.
They are. They're guilty. That's when my dad used to spank me. I didn't do it. Well, you did something.
Niggers in our schools, we're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place, we'll have a better nation. Our South Bend got along just fine till those integrators came down here stirring up a mess with outside agitators. They'll march it in and demonstrate to try to take our schools. They want to change our southern ways with a brand new set of rules. Oh, we don't don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation. We must prove to Martin Luther we stand for what is right. No court of left-wing liberals can ever make him white. Form a solid line of white men, conservative will be. They'll never, ever overcome. Our schools will still be free. No, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation. We must prove to Martin Luther we stand for what is right. No court of left-wing liberals can ever make him white. Form a solid line of white men, conservatives will be. They'll never, ever overcome. Our schools will still be free. No, we don't want niggers in our schools. We're not for integration. Keep those niggers in their place. We'll have a better nation.
You notice that way back when they were equivocating, were conservatives. That's all right, but they should have said, we are racist. We are white racist separatists, and that's the way it should have been. But you could see how they were equivocating way back in the 60s.
I do hate Bette Midler and Goldie Hawn. I'm going to tell you why. Because every time I go to the movie, one of the two of them bitches come and go, Earth Day and... Any Latinos here? I didn't talk about the Mexicans. Let me, please. Good. Good. Let's get this Mexican shit straight. L.A. is Mexico. Don't let the white folks fool you. That's Mexico. If you don't believe it, take your Mexican friends to the border. They run right back to Los Angeles. Didn't the Mexicans have... In L.A., they had some... What's your holiday? Cinco, some shit? What is it? Cinco de Mayo. Oh, you scared white folks. Oh, thousands of white Mexicans came to downtown L.A. Thousands of them. Got out the same car. Scared the fuck out of white folks. And I like Mexicans in L.A. I don't know about here, but Mexicans, I like you guys. You guys are independent. You'll sell pencils, oranges on the side of the freeway. You don't give a fuck. Mexicans won't ask you for directions. They ain't asking nobody for shit. Niggas used to be like that before they got integrated. They got like white folks and went crazy. Because we didn't been all kind of things. We've been colored, Negro, Black, African, been all that shit. It's true. You guys are going to be all kind of names. Isn't that a bitch? How come we just can't be free? That's what I want. Totally. I'm going to see that shit. I'm taking every motherfucker with me. We ain't going to be free. We're going to be dead together. How about that? No justice, no peace. I said, fuck that. We don't get peace till we get even. Fuck that bullshit. I'm a get even motherfucker. And then we'll get some peace after I do some shit. Where's Dahmer when I need him? Because you know that white man was eating niggas, wasn't he? Tastes just like chicken. Having a good time. The boy worked at a chocolate factory. That should have told somebody something. All he found in his icebox was mayonnaise and Louisiana hot sauce. He was having a good time. And the black neighbors were funny, weren't they? I heard all that sawing. I thought the boy was building shelves. Another black neighbor said, well, I heard him arguing all the time, but I never heard nobody answer him back. The white folks have got real quiet. White people do not like to hear about white folks eating niggas. Trust me. They get real quiet. This is not funny anymore. Well, he was eating them. I wasn't. That motherfucker was eating niggas. Live with it. That's why, see, I just think white people stared at us because they were curious about Dahmer. Now I know white people are cannibals. They staring because they hungry. Waiting to catch a nigga on that freeway with a flap. This white man ate folks, okay? You see his trial? You'd have thought he was a Vogue model. They were so casual with this motherfucker. If that was a nigga, 8, 17 young white boys, they'd have brought him in a cage chained with tape on his mouth. Don't go near him. He eats people. Don't go near him. And for the next 100 years, all your white friends would have wore you out with that. I'm liberal and stuff, and I'd like to live next to you, but, you know, I wouldn't want to wake up and be your breakfast. Oh, you remember when you niggers flipped out in the early 90s? Start eating white folks. You remember? Because that's their fantasy with us. Big bone, big pot. Oh, they're going to get us. And all the time is white folks trying to get a hold of a Mac nigger. McDonald's new burger, Mac nigger. Oh, I'll buy one. I had two for one Mac nigger. Look, you guys have been wonderful, and I love it.
Shut the fuck up. We're all gonna die here. These are cops.
Oh, they're cops. Who gives a shit?
Really, something I never told you about me. I hate fucking cops.
Did you get that, boys and girls? I have nothing to say, Mr. Federal Man, Mr. State Man. You'll never get yourself in trouble by saying that. I have nothing to say. Get me a lawyer. Do you realize how many 100 white racists are in prison because they didn't observe that one thing? I have nothing to say. No, they want to try to convince the cops and the feds how innocent they are. And they don't give a shit how innocent you are. They want to put a notch on their gun, man. They want your ass. And once they get your ass, they're not going to let you go. I get letters from guys in prison all over the place, appealing their cases. Oh, I got somebody working on it. No, once they get you in there, as the order members will tell you, they don't want to let you go. They love you. Yeah, right.
It's a professional artist center. In Dublin, it's a professional artist center.
Thomas Sheridan, born in Dublin, is a professional artist and writer living and working in South Sligo under the shadow of the Ox Mountains in Ireland. He is a former rock musician and graphic designer. He moved to the region in 1998 and has been painting full-time since 2005. He is also the author of the book Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, a first-person account of the charlatans the cheats, the liars, the neglectful parents, abusive teachers, two-faced politicians and their psychopathic control grid, tyrannical bosses and colleagues from hell that we have all encountered, including the lying lovers who use and then lose us in an instant. Puzzling People takes an in-depth look at how the minds of the psychopaths work and why, and focuses on what you can do to survive and thrive and ultimately escape forever. The book is a field guide to spotting and avoiding entities so completely lacking in empathy or compassion, they may as well be counted as a different species entirely to human beings. Stay with us as we discuss this very important topic of the psychopathic control grid and what the true implications of this means to us, both on an individual and global level. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Thomas Sheridan. It is great to have you with us. Thank you for taking the time. How are you today, Thomas?
I'm doing great, Henrik, and thank you for having me on. I'm a big fan of the show, and I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk with you here today about your work, about your book, and about some of the things, obviously, that you've been researching here now. I became aware of your work a while back. I've been keeping an eye on it, if you will, and it's really, really interesting. We're going to have a good time here today to try to break down some of these things and these very, very important people. Your book, as I've mentioned, is called Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath. And I want to ask you a little bit later, Thomas, about your background and kind of how you got into it. But why don't we begin to just talk a little bit about how you would define psychopath? I guess we can assume that we have some people with us here who haven't been, catching up on all the latest material, and therefore we could go through some of this at the top here. And I would also like to divide it up, I guess, into two different categories. I think most of the people listening can understand the idea of psychopathic governments. We have talked about different unions of the world, even mega corporations, if you will, as well, as kind of bunching those in the collective psychopathic groups, if you will. But then we have also the individual psychopath that people might encounter during everyday life, if you will. But why don't you break it down a little bit for us, Thomas, and talk a little bit about some of the traits, if you will, some of the symptoms, how we can spot if we're dealing with a psychopath or not.
Well, the term psychopath goes back about 100 years. Prior to that, the actual pathology was, it was well noticed, mainly among studies regarding sort of marginalized groups, immigrant groups and impoverished groups. And they would use terms such as moral insanity or moral imbecility, but psychopath came into common usage about a century ago. Then later on, to put a proper framework upon the actual science behind it, Harvey Kleckley in the 1940s wrote a book, and he basically determined that the psychopathic condition is an individual who is inside them is they have no conscience, they have no ability to feel remorse or any kind of consideration for the damage they do to others. It's coupled with an interesting level of internal chaos that is then projected upon other people in terms of manipulating and controlling them to get what they want and to use them according to what the psychopath needs to take from them. It could be anything from money to sex to power to their vote to just even manipulating them for the sake of it. They have an unrestrained impulsiveness when it comes to this. This then later developed on, and as technology improved, we came towards the age of the MRI and the CAT scan, and suddenly we now had a tool which could actually scan the brain of individuals, and very clearly, right from the very earliest times it was used on psychopaths, their brain waves showed up quite differently. Dr. Robert Hare, PhD, who's the world's foremost expert on psychopathology at the University of British Columbia, has done tremendous work over the years in this. And what he demonstrated was that psychopaths process information in their brains very, very differently than a normal person. What happens is a normal person generally processes their information regarding things like emotions and things like that in the limbic regions and the frontal cortex, the frontal lobes of the brain. In the upper brain, psychopaths, on the other hand, even when they're not even involved in any emotional you know, aspect, just actually the general, you know, day-to-day intellectual processes in their brain, they cannot store the information in their brain within designated partitions like a normal person does, and they tend to scatter the information all over their brain. And they're also in a state of a light sleep while they're doing this. So they're very, very different in how they operate their brains than the rest of us. They are, you know, they're profoundly mentally ill, but the thing is that they're mentally ill and they can hide this behind a mask of sanity because they have an incredible ability to be chameleons and to work the targets they're using, inventing bespoke personas based on the needs and the requirements and indeed the insecurities of the individuals that they're targeting and the nations and the corporations and the shareholders and whoever else they're interested in. And basically becoming what they want. They're very good tape recorders. They're very good at playing back what you need to hear from them. And this is why they make natural politicians. And then at the first, there's five apps. There's many traits contained within the pathology. There's all kinds of things from, they're incredibly, you know, flatterers. They flatter people in order to manipulate them. Just things like they'll fall asleep and wake up quickly. A sense of glibness. They all have a narcissistic trait where they're born for a special purpose, even if they don't necessarily you know, verbalize this, but many of them do. They will internally see themselves as almost like a god or someone who's better than everyone else. This is why a lot of them are very interested in things like Darwinian evolution, because they see themselves as the next stage in evolution, the ones that I've spoke to personally since the book came out. But there are five absolute traits that all psychopaths have. The first one is they invent personas to manipulate their targets. No psychopath as such has a personality. Underneath there is a predatory consciousness, and on top of that, that predatory consciousness develops bespoke personas which are used to work individual targets, which can be switched on and off. For instance, you could have a man who's trying to manipulate women and get them to marry them or move in with them, just maybe get free rent. If the first woman he meets is sort of like a new age hippie chick, he'll be talking about crystals and, you know, all the new age stuff and all that kind of thing until he's finished with her. And then when he's finished with her, the next woman could be, I don't know, a white nationalist racist. And he would be, you know, a white nationalist racist. He'll switch just like that. And that would be the invented personas. Like the second one was they have no remorse. They feel absolutely no remorse for anything they've done in their lives. They recognize that they're doing wrong only because society has told them that this is wrong through, you know, our overall moral framework. But they don't feel any guilt for what they do. This is why they can destroy a human being, wreck their finances, manipulate them and ruin them, and or right up to a whole country, and walk away as if, you know, what's the problem? I don't care. They all do this. They will invoke pity to manipulate and control. When you usually encounter a psychopath, you'll nearly always get a sob story. My life has been so hard. Blah, 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 blah. Poor me. I never got the breaks as a kid. And what they're doing is they're breaking you down. They're breaking down your defenses. They're playing on your compassion and your empathy for other human beings. The next one is they all have mysterious pasts. Their past don't make sense. You don't really know where a lot of them come from. They say they lived in this place for a while. They moved to this place. They were in the military for a while. You find that they weren't. They claim to be members of different ethnic groups and races. And you can never, ever actually get to the past of a psychopath. And the final one is they all have high levels of the hormone testosterone, both the male and the female psychopaths. So they're the five absolute traits of the psychopath. No remorse, invented personas, invoking pity, mysterious pasts, and high levels of testosterone.
It sounds really, really, really strange when you add these things together, obviously. And the question is that I'm going to try to get to here is what it is. I mean, you're mentioning no personality basically here. So obviously, where does it stem from, do you think, and how much research do you know has been done on this? I mean, is it genetic? Is it a disease, a disorder of the mind? Is it the ego run amok? Can we try to pinpoint it, Thomas?
Well, I think the best description I've ever heard of it was by Dr. Robert Hare, who called them intra-species predators. Basically what they are. I've looked at everything. I've read every, like, you know, academic document. I've looked at all kinds of reports from, you know, university teaching hospitals. I've read all the articles in the American Psychiatric Journal and some of the British ones as well. And I've come to the conclusion that The psychopath just seems to appear out of nowhere. It's almost as if there's a predatory consciousness, you know, that's out there that just jumps into the human body at the moment of birth or in the womb and then manifests within a family. There's absolutely no hard proof it's genetic. Now, there's a huge push to try and make it look like it's genetic, just like there's an obsession with genetics today where they want to make it, basically make you believe that everything is in the genes, that your personality works. Yeah. And so there's a lot of that kind of thing with psychopathology going on as well. But there's no, when you look into it, there's no hard proof. It's more like wishful thinking. And also, the anecdotal proof is very much out there that you'll have families where you could have like a string of empathic parents, and then suddenly one kid is born among the five kids they have, and this child is a psychopath. You can have a psychopathic parent who gives birth to five children, and they're all normal. It's almost like the same dynamic when you could have a family where there's no musicians in the family, and then suddenly out of blue, one kid is born as a great piano or guitar player, or there's no athletes in the family, and then suddenly out of blue, some kid is born as a tremendous tennis, soccer, or rugby player.
Right.
It seems to happen the same way. There's no hard proof of genetics. Now, in terms of actual the nature versus nurture thing, there is something which I have called a proto-psychopath. Now, what a proto-psychopath is someone who would emulate the pathology in terms of their behavior. Basically, as a past trauma would have, you know, as a result of a past trauma, say they were in a war, or, you know, they had to deal with sectarian violence or racism or an abusive, sexually abusive home, were molested by members of the clergy, they would grow up with psychopathic tendencies, but they're basically normal people who are just lashing out at society. But they're not psychopaths. If you got them, you can cure them, you can fix them. Where if you put them under brain scans, under the CAT scan, they would have a normal brain. They're not psychopaths. Where the psychopath, who represents one in every 22 to 25 people in Western society, there's no cure. There's absolutely no doubt that we're dealing with something that's it's almost like an alien life form that lives amongst us.
I was thinking about spiritual parasite or something like that. I mean, if it's not detectable yet, at least by our scientific means, to me it feels like it is. I mean, as you read more and more of this material, do you get a feeling for the fact that this might be an entity, if you will, Thomas, in itself that has latched on to certain individuals? What do you think?
Yes, We'll step outside the wider, you know, outside the sort of gray matter and the bits and pieces, and we'll look in terms of consciousness. Well, we all know that there's, you know, of underlying process that drives everything in the cosmos, and you would have among the humans a collective consciousness. Now, within that consciousness of every human being, you would have all the things like the ego, the id, the anima, the animus, and all the other concepts that psychology and Jungism has given to us over the years. However, the more I think about it and the more discussion I've had with people about this, it seems to me that the psychopath seems to have a pathology and a behavioral trait that's very much rooted in the reptilian core of the brain, in the Oort complex. At the bottom of the brain, there is our early primitive brain, and it's the Oort complex, and it's uniquely concerned with things like survival, sexual reproduction, to pass on DNA, kill or be killed, and it's constantly, you know, it's constantly paranoid, looking around and trying not to be killed. Now, on top of that, you would have the mammalian cortexes, and this would be like the part of our brain which evolution, you know, in terms of evolution, gave us things like nurturing for our young. You know, reptiles don't take care of their young, so, you know, animals, birds do, in mammals, they take care of their young, they nurture their young, they suckle, they have a sense of bonding, community, tribal, and herding and pack. Aspects, and then on top of that, the latest part of the human brain, which would be the frontal lobes, the upper cortex, the very frontal part of the brain. This is the part of the brain that developed very, very quickly in evolutionary terms. It's quite a mystery, actually. It seems to have developed more or less around the same time that language and writing and art entered the sort of human paradigm.
Right.
But this part of the brain is also where we process things like dreaming, cognitive awareness, things, abstract concepts. These are things that are all deficient in psychopaths. And the more I think about it, I'm starting to believe that the actual reptilian cortex of the brain is where the psychopath lives. And there may be, on a sort of a level, a need by psychopaths in power to almost attack our higher instincts or in our higher sense of awareness. You know, it's almost like as if the reptilian cortex of the brain is trying to attack the upper cortexes, and it's doing it through the consciousness, through the mind, through the ego. And I think that's probably where it's taking us now. I think the answer will be found there rather in genetics.
Interesting. So I've heard from some sources, and I think Hare himself, Robert Hare, estimates that about 1% of the population are psychopaths. You mentioned about 1 to every 20 to 25. Some other ones I've heard is about 6% are born this way. This must be difficult to know, obviously. I mean, how would one go about to try to weed this out of the population of the world, Thomas?
Yeah, well, I use the official yardstick. The official numbers are, it's 1 in 22 in the United States and Canada. It's 1 in 25 in the European Union. So sorry, 1 in 28. So I rounded off to 1 in 25. So roughly 4% are psychopathic to some degree. Now, that means that you can have some who are just, you know, most of them will just be like shifty swindlers and creeps and cretins. But then that would be all the way up to like dictators and you know, extreme serial killers. So there's a range of the pathology. It's not all that they're fully out of control, but they're all the same. They're ultimately all capable of that.
So what would you say are some of the consequences of this on an individual level? Let's say we have a non-psychopath interacting or getting a relationship involved in some way with a psychopath. I mean, and then later we can look at how this, you know, manifests itself on a larger scale, obviously, as well in terms of world politics and all this. But more mundane on an individual level, what are some of the traits? What is happening, if I put it that way, Thomas?
Well, everybody who writes to me, whether it's a male or female psychopath they're involved in, it always begins the same way, and it always develops the same way. The psychopath lives in a world of where they don't actually love anything, but they idealize things. So their whole agenda with a human being, or indeed an object, see, they don't see a difference in a human being and an object, it's the same to them. So it begins, there's an initial stage of idealization, then there's an establishment of the relationship, and then there's a discarding of the target to move on to the next one. So suppose there was a psychopathic man and he wanted to start a relationship with a normal woman. Say he'd be on an internet message board, he'd be looking around, and he would he'd look at something like Facebook or whatever, and he'd see this woman who's probably not bad looking, but he wouldn't really care about her looks anyway. She'll post something like, oh, I have, you know, everything I want in life now, the perfect job, I have a beautiful home, and all I need now is the right man. And he'll immediately start working in on her. Now, he won't right away approach her as a potential suitor. He will do things like he will look up all her Facebook groups and then put her email address into Google, find what hobbies she's interested in, what various things interest her, what her passions are. And he'll not only learn these things, but he will do things like connect himself to them. And he will do things like, if he finds out that this woman is, she's involved in African charities, you know, helping poor kids in Africa, he'll join an African charity group with his real name there, and he'll be donating money and openly saying, oh, I'm so glad I could help the children in that village building the school, blah, 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 blah. And then he'll approach her, and he'll say, oh, where do you live? And it's a normal interaction, and he'll say, oh, yeah, yeah. And he'll say something like, yeah, I'm trying to raise money for a school in Africa, and bang, he's got her. Because, you know, she thinks to herself, why, this guy is great. He really cares about, you know, the same things I do. He's obviously a nice guy. And then they might meet or something like that. And then he'll begin to flatter her. He'll tell her how good looking she is. If she's insecure about her weight, he'll tell her she's got a beautiful figure. And the sexual aspects will develop instantaneously. And the sex is usually pretty intense because of the high testosterone levels. They have phenomenal sex drive. They also have sex constantly to deal with the boredom. So she'll think she's met this dream guy. They'll be having sex constantly. He'll be completely romantic. He'll be everything she wants to be. And then it'll move to the next stage. They tend to get married or engaged, or, you know, they legitimize the relationship very, 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 very quickly. And then what will happen then is that as soon as they're married, they have a child, or they've legitimized the relationship to something like a mortgage or a co owning of money or assets, then change. She'll the same guy he used to be. He will He will not be interested in being a sort of like this dashing romantic swain that he was prior to the, you know, the legitimization of the relationship. And then what's going to happen then is he will start looking for other targets. It's very common for them to start having sex with other people within a few days of their being married. Getting married to them means nothing. It's like, you know, ordering a cheeseburger. And then he'll be looking for an upgrade. They're always constantly looking for an upgrade. And he will start looking around, and then he begins.
Well, I got to cut it off there. We're running a little long here, and but we'll pick up on that some other time. Very interesting, especially when he touched on the tripart brain, which I've believed in a long time. The simian, the reptilian, and the mammalian, of the three-part brain. And I've always said that that's what happens to people who go crazy on drugs. Those drugs go right into that little walnut of a reptilian brain right at the top of your spine, and people go nuts. Seems quite simple to me, because the reptilian brain does not have any of the attributes of the mammalian brain, of course. Reptiles don't, there's no compassion, anything. It just kill and eat. That's it. Well, I'll be back tomorrow, I hope, if Odin wills it. And this has been sort of a potpourri, sort of roughly put together from my large files here that I've been looking through. I've got to clean out a lot of these files. A lot of them are blank files and so forth, but I discover a lot of good stuff in there. At least I think it's good stuff. So 14.5, and I have nothing to say.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet, as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you, like